This is Radio Superior 1944, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1944. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now into the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lake station, KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you, use it up, wear it out, make it do or do without it. It's 6 o'clock Standard Wartime, Friday, July 21st, 1944. Lou Martin is standing by with a startling news from Berlin. Harriet is in the community news, and we're having a paper drive right here on the radio, folks. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Zanuzowski Liquor and Wines. Yo-ho-ho, buy a fifth of Puerto Rican rum for just $3.49. Zanuzowski, the largest liquor and wine stock around, folks, at 715 Tower Avenue. And good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. There's been an attempt on Adolf Hitler's life. U.S. Marines have landed on Guam in another Pacific invasion, and Wallace and Truman are fighting for the vice presidential nomination. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Roundup.
This is Neutral Switzerland. Stan Turner in Bern. Radio reports from Berlin and information gleaned from travelers arriving here from Berlin indicate German Führer Adolf Hitler survived an assassination attempt. He has apparently decreed revenge that may lead to a bloodbath. Berlin DNB Radio just announced the execution of former Chief of Staff Colonel General Ludwig Beck. Only bits of information are coming together, so this puzzle remains incomplete. But apparently Hitler was burned and bruised in an explosion that injured several of his staff and killed at least one person. Hitler was not seriously hurt. Besides the execution of Beck, DNB Radio reports that Colonel Hans von Stauffenberg was also executed. Von Stauffenberg, on the German general staff, was named by the Nazis as the man who planted the bomb at a conference of military hierarchy. 12 gold-braided high officers were hurt in the explosion, but Field Marshal General Wilhelm Keitel escaped uninjured. This is the gravest internal crisis the Nazis have ever known. Gestapo Chief Heinrich Himmler is the newly vested commander of the German armed forces. He is ordering a massive roundup of suspected collaborators, which may rival the Night of the Long Knives of June 30th, 1934. That was when Hitler ordered the killing of many Nazi brown shirts, which was the strong arm of the Nazi party, but replaced by Himmler's Gestapo and SS. General Beck was chief of the general staff until November of 1938. DNB Radio says for years Beck had opposed Hitler. In Bern, this is Stan Turner reporting. Calling Sweden, come in Stockholm.
This is Neutral Sweden calling Alpha Dem Shock in Stockholm. Air travelers from Berlin arriving tonight in Malmo say the German capital is in a state of siege. Passengers aboard two planes tell me that the SS and Gestapo are posted around the city while regular troops have been sent outside Berlin. They say Berlin is quiet with no shooting or revolt. Even so, there is a report that two German divisions have revolted in the Russian-besieged area of East Prussia while Hitler decrees a full-blown purge of his generals. Berlin Radio Deputy Press Chief Sunderman says the assassination ringleader Colonel General Beck was connected to a foreign power and planned to sue for peace after taking over the bomb-tortured Reich. Meanwhile, monitoring Atlantic Radio, which supposedly operates from inside Germany and opposes the Reich, has declared that revolution has burst out in Germany and that part of the Eastern Army is deserting and returning from the front. Broadcasts from radio in London are urging the people of Germany to overthrow Hitler and save the fatherland, but that does not appear to be happening. Speeches by Reichsmarschall Goering and Navy Commander Admiral Dönitz berated the traitorous actions of the assassins. This indicates high-ranking military leaders are closing ranks behind Hitler. In Stockholm, this is Alfred M. Schock calling the Western Front. Come in, France.
This is the Supreme Headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Force in northern France. Max Jordan reporting. Nazi troops are continuing to hold up the Allied push in Normandy toward Caen. British and Canadian infantry made the most progress to the east of Caen, penetrating within 8 miles of that strategic city that has eluded them since D-Day. Even so, it is clear that General Bernard Montgomery's advance has failed in its main objective, to bring the main force of the German army into battle outside of Caen. General Montgomery was also unable to encircle the city, while German Field Marshal Erwin Rommel had only to use a few tanks to the battle, holding back his reserves. In 3 days of fighting this offensive, the Tommies have been gaining less than 2 miles a day, hardly the progress Monty would prefer in a big armored offensive. Meanwhile, in the drive southeast of Caen and the road to Paris, a Nazi anti-tank screen still held up the Second Army from advancing beyond the newly captured Fresnes-Rouvroy. With the Allied Expeditionary Force in France, this is Max Jordan calling the Central Pacific. Come in, Pearl Harbor.
This is Hawaii, U.S. Pacific Fleet Headquarters, Pearl Harbor. Charles H. McMurtry, your correspondent. The invasion of Guam is underway. United States Marines and infantry are pouring ashore on Guam, the first American territory taken by the Japanese. Under the cover of a pulverizing air and naval bombardment, Admiral Chester Nimitz says the GIs are fighting their way inland against moderate opposition. These landings began yesterday morning and come quickly after the great victory to take Saipan. Guam is the southernmost and largest of the Marianas Islands. In American hands, it will greatly strengthen Saipan's position as a base, which Japan can be mortally assaulted from. Guam is 130 miles southwest of Saipan, and both islands are in easy superfortress range of Tokyo and all of Japan. The Philippines are likely vulnerable to U.S. bombing runs, and the mighty forces Admiral Nimitz is hurling across the Pacific, lying 1,500 miles to the west of Guam. At U.S. Pacific Fleet Headquarters at Pearl Harbor, this is Charles McMurtry calling Moscow. Come in, Eddie Gilmore.
This is Soviet Russia. Eddie Gilmore reporting from Moscow. The Red Army have a deadly stranglehold on the Germans' Baltic front, deep inside Lithuania today. They hurled a massive blow against Poland's martyred capital of Warsaw and sealed the fate of the Nazi stronghold at Lwów. That German garrison is doomed. It faces the same fate of German divisions earlier this week at Brody. Those soldiers are now being annihilated. Pouring across the Trans-Lithuanian Railway, Soviet forces captured the junction of Skopiski, 165 miles east of Memel. The main objective is Warsaw, a little more than 100 miles from the Red Army vanguard. The Soviets are fiercely attacking the Nazi defenses at the Bug River. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore. Calling America, come in Chicago.
John Hightower reporting from Chicago Stadium. President Roosevelt has accepted his party's nomination for an unprecedented and, a few years ago, unthinkable fourth term in office. The president made his acceptance speech via shortwave radio from an unspecified naval base in the Pacific. FDR predicted the next 4 years will provide a permanent peace that will offer veterans stable jobs and not the breadlines and apple-selling left for the last war's veterans. He said voters will decide between experience and immaturity in November's election. This was the closest he came to mentioning his 42-year-old Republican opponent from New York, Governor Thomas Dewey. But that isn't what is providing the suspense here in Chicago. The race for the number two slot is still undecided. This is like a flashback to 1940, also in Chicago. That was when FDR let it be known he didn't want Vice President John Nance Garner on the ticket, mostly because Mr. Garner opposed the president's run for a third term, hoping to get the nomination himself. Now, without publicly saying so, Mr. Roosevelt is not supporting Vice President Henry Wallace. Instead, insiders here say he prefers 45-year-old Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas or Missouri U.S. Senator Harry S. Truman. Douglas' nomination is apparently going nowhere, and Vice President Wallace is not giving up without a fight. Delegates at Chicago Stadium split their vote
although Mr. Wallace has 337 votes pledged to him, and Senator Truman just 83. 589 votes are required. Others getting votes today are wartime jobs administrator Paul McNutt, Kentucky Senator Alvin Barkley, and Speaker Sam Rayburn of Texas. Senator Truman has gotten a national reputation for being the chairman of the Senate's War Investigating Committee. But Mr. Truman is getting Southern backing, while Mr. Wallace incited many from Dixie with his call to eliminate poll taxes to have equal voting among the races. At Chicago Stadium, this is your correspondent, John Hightower. Come in, Frederick Oatman.
This is Chicago. Frederick C. Oatman, your reporter on the scene at the Democratic National Convention. I'll tell you what. These Democrats starve their delegates for food and stuff them with oratory. Yesterday's 13-hour session at Chicago Stadium went without any food. I know, I was there, and so was my stomach. For the love of Mike, food was late in coming, and when it came, there wasn't much of it. Today, delegates snuck out for ham sandwiches. Can you believe they charged 35 cents for just one lousy ham sandwich? And the brutal part is, there wasn't any ham. And that's unusual at any political gathering, if you know what I mean. That left a menu of pretzels, pretzels, and more pretzels. I hate pretzels. Stomachs made more noise than some of the rallies. Florida Senator Claude Pepper showed signs of deprivation when he barked earnestly into the microphone, "Florida casts four birds for Mr. Bird." He's not even running for anything. A Minnesota delegate proclaimed in a quavering voice that the North Star State would go whole hog for Theodore Roosevelt. That's right, Teddy. He was probably preoccupied with the hog. I know I was. At Chicago Stadium, this is Frederick C. Oatman.
KUWS News Time is 6:08 Central Wartime. Jack McKenna has these words from our sponsor.
Have you been into Zanazowski's yet? Well, if you haven't, you better get there because they've got some great sale prices on right now. By the bottle, nonetheless. Just in liquor. Prices slashed. Below ceiling prices. Blended whiskey. $2.99 a fifth. Old log cabin, straight bourbon, you know, 3 1/4 a fifth. How about some vodka, 90 proof? Well, $3.67. So far, I can afford any of these. Rum, imported rum, $3.49 a fifth. That'd be good at a fourth. Gin, how about gin for London Dry, eh? That's expensive usually, isn't it? Not here, $3.65. Bulk wines, yeah, as usual, buy the bottles and the kegs and everything. You can have it any way you want it, folks. Largest liquor stock and variety at Tower Avenue. 715's the address. Now you get there, you hear?
As action heats up in both the European and Pacific theaters of war, we're getting more reports of casualties of men from our region. Mrs. O. Tutland of Route 2 in Ashland got word from the War Department that her son, Marine Private Robert Cummings, has been wounded in action. Details are lacking, but Private Cummings has been overseas in the Pacific since October of 1941. A B-24 Liberator bomber turret operator from Superior is listed as missing in action. The mother of Staff Sergeant Paul Strelka was notified today that her son is missing after leaving on a mission July the 5th over France. Sergeant Strelka's brother, Conrad, was recently awarded a Purple Heart for wounds he received in the South Pacific fighting. Conrad Strelka joined the service in early 1942. Florida's junior senator will be visiting Superior next week. United States Senator Claude Pepper will be here for a ship launching. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has more.
Senator Pepper has been a vocal supporter of President Roosevelt's policies, Lou. In fact, he was one of the most outspoken for important legislation to help England before we entered the war, such as Lend-Lease. But Senator Pepper won't be the only national figure to be at the ship launching next Friday, Lou. Former Superiorite Catherine Lenroot will be on hand, too. Miss Lenroot is in Washington these days. She's the director of the Children's Bureau of the U.S. Department of Labor. Together, they'll christen the USS Hidalgo at Walter Butler Shipyards. The ship is named after Mexican General Miguel Hidalgo Castillo, a leader in the Mexican War for Independence. Reverend George Senti will provide the invocation, Lou.
Thanks, Mike. As Jack mentioned earlier, a paper drive is underway in Superior, Ashland, Duluth, and surrounding communities. Scarcity of paper is alarming. Servicemen are being asked to pick up paper in the war zones. War Production Board Chairman Donald Nelson says that each man, woman, and child in the country must salvage 6.5 pounds of paper for this drive, Jack.
I don't think I have much in the way of paper lying around. I read the newspaper here at the station, as a matter of fact.
Leaving it all crumpled. And you cut out the coupons before I can even read it.
Oh, touchy, touchy. 6.5 pounds of paper is a lot, folks. Especially since we just finished a big paper drive last month.
People are going to have to dig deep. Look in their attics and basement. Even, dare I say, part with their comic books. Sorry, buddy.
Well, I'll look high and low for paper, but not my comic books. Lou Martin, folks, the meanest newsman around. Our forecast for this lovely Friday evening, July 21st, 1944, calls for fair skies and nice temperatures tonight, with a low around 55. Tomorrow, get out the umbrella. It looks like thunderstorms and a high of 75. Hey, here's some music to salvage paper by even. Comic books, oh. Here's Dinah Shore and Blues in the Night on the Martin and McKenna Paper Drive Show.
My mama done told me when I was in pigtail. My mama done told me, a man's gonna sweet talk and give you the glad eye. But when that sweet talk is done, a man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night. Now the rains have fallen here, the trains are calling, who mama then told me, hear that lonesome whistle blowing across the trestle, hooey. My mama then told me, a hooey da hooey, old tickety clack is echoing back the blues in the night. The evening breeze will start the trees to cry. To St. Joe, wherever the four winds blow. I've been to some big towns, I've heard Mr. Big talk, but there is one thing I know. A man is a two-faced, a worrisome thing who'll leave you to sing the blues in the night.
Dinah Shore and Blues in the Night. Let's keep the good times rolling before our guests arrive to urge you to join the big paper drive. Here's Ray Noble and his orchestra and Linda on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Hello, cutie. What's your name?
Fresh. I don't talk to strangers.
Oh, I'm no stranger. Been waiting every evening for you to walk by.
Keep waiting. I'm still walking.
Oh, what's your name?
None of your business.
Pretty name. I'll just call you Linda.
Well, how did you guess?
When I go to sleep, I never count sheep. I count all the charms about Linda. And lately it seems, in all of my dreams, I walk with my arms about Linda. But what good does it do me? For Linda doesn't know I exist. Can't help feeling gloomy. Think of all the loving I have missed. We pass on the street, my heart skips a beat. I say to myself, hello, Linda. If only she'd smile, I'd stop her a while, and then I would get to know Linda. But miracles still happen, and when my lucky star begins to shine, with one lucky break I'll make Linda mine. Could I see you again sometime?
Maybe.
How about Saturday night?
Well...
Shall I pick you up at 8?
Okay.
Oh, boy, that's a date.
Bye now.
So miracles do happen, and now my lucky stars begin to shine. With one lucky break, I'll make Linda mine.
Ray Noble and his orchestra, and a cutesy song called Linda on station KUWS. I assume all that loud talking, in spite of the quiet on the air light, is from the guys for the paper drive.
It's really pretty impressive. Everybody's chipping in.
All right, let's have a little order and construction here.
You mean constructivity. You want some organization around here. And the colonel's the guy to do it.
I've got everything under control, constructively speaking. You got your sports magazines over in this pile. You got your newspapers, weeklies and dailies in this pile. Your periodicals with pictures in this pile. We wouldn't want youngsters getting a hold of those pictures from National Geographic.
So what do I do with my realty magazines? I mean, I don't see no special spot for these beauties.
I've got some ladies' magazines, too.
Wow. You've got all the ladies' home journals from the last 5 years. I'm particularly enjoyed the September 41 issue about patios.
You'd better start doing some quick introducing for the folks out there in radio land, Lou.
You read ladies' home journal? What kind of colonel are you?
Well, there's good articles about lawns, and I like a good yard.
Let me introduce draft board chairman, Colonel Joe Raffaele, station engineer.
In charge.
Joe Gardonio. And our community editor, Harriet Farrig. Jack, help me here with these magazines.
Hey, they look heavy.
Ah, for the love of Mike. If Harriet can carry them, you better get those lily-livered limbs working.
But she's a welder at the shipyard. Oh, okay, I'll take half a stack at a time.
My hero. Let me introduce to you George G. Newton of the George G. Newton Realty.
At your service.
Hey, Gardionio Dio. There's only room for one Joe in charge. And it sure as heck isn't you. Imagine, separating the sports magazines from the news magazines. Sports is news, man.
Well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. You wouldn't think of mixing sports with my engineer's monthly.
Got that right. You wouldn't think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah!
Not to put an end to this pithy conversation, but we really do need to sift through this stuff. And while we're doing that, we'll hear from Harriet Farig about the community news.
Thank you, Lewis. Even in time of war, the ladies of the Superior Garden Club are preparing a thing of beauty. And that's the wonderful and colorful flower show for next month's Tri-State Fair. Superior Garden Club General Chairman Mrs. O.C. Graydon is leading the group of 9 garden clubs from Superior, Solon Springs, Poplar, Rockmount, and the Piney Ramblers Garden Club.
How tiny are these gamblers? And why are tiny gamblers gardening?
Oh, she said shiny. Think, it's got to make sense. Shiny ramblers. They're all spit and polish.
Oh, my word. I said piney ramblers from the Pine Barrens in southern Douglas County. The women of the Moose will entertain at an open card party Tuesday evening at the Union Labor Temple.
Probably gambling with those tiny people, eh, Rappy?
Yeah. I know, if I were a woman, I wouldn't like being called a moose.
Maybe a moosette.
Never. Miss Ida Grew and Eunice Wickland are assisting.
Now, Ida Grew would be a good one for that garden club. Think, guys?
Hey, you guys should be careful.
On the hillside, there could be a gal named Eileen.
Harriet's face is getting all red. Let's get some music here to save the day. Here's a new one by the Charioteers and Running Wild on the Martin and McKenna Paper Drive Show. Charioteers and Running Wild on station KUWS.
Not to make fun of the garden club and women of the Moose.
You know, it got kind of chilly in here all of a sudden. Strange for July.
Downright frosty.
Yeah, say, Harriet's right. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we was just joshing.
I have the utmost respect for the women of the Moose.
Listeners should know that paper is our number one war material shortage.
Paper collected in Superior and this region is going to be shipped immediately to reprocessing mills. Money received from the paper is going to be given to the Boy Scouts, St. Joseph's Orphanage, and the Children's Home.
Mothers, we need those boxes and cartons. Your boy in khaki needs the vital war materials from waste paper, blood plasma containers, bomb rings, plane parts, and cartridge boxes.
So don't take paper for granted.
Don't burn it. Don't wrap your fish in it. Don't throw it away. Fighting men need it.
So listen up. Every man, woman, and child in Superior is responsible for at least 6.4 pounds of waste paper for this particular drive. There are three easy steps to follow. First, the magazines and bundles are about 12 inches high. B, tie the paper in light bundles about 12 inches high. And three, put your brown paper in bundles that can be handled.
No, you got it all wrong. There's no discipline in this layout. We need to reconnoiter first, then bundle.
Listen, Bob.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah!
Boy Scouts on city trucks will pick up the paper along the curbstone today and tomorrow.
They start bright and early at 7 a.m.
Hey, Jack, I see you got a stack of old comic books here.
Right next to the colonel's stack of stars and stripes, blood and guts. And home and garden.
What a patriot to donate these. I mean, comic books never grow old. I read them over and over. Heck, when my mom cleaned out my comic books drawer and threw them all away a few years back, that's when I knew it was time to leave home.
You ran away because your mother threw out your comic books?
Well, I figured, heck, I've been out of high school for 10 years. It's time to move out on my own anyhow.
Yeah, that'd make you at least, 42?
Yeah.
Pretty courageous of you.
So, goodbye, hey, was that a dig? Well.
So, goodbye, Alley-Oop, and Henry, and Bazooka Joe. Keep a stiff upper lip, folks. With Bing Crosby and Accentuate the Positive on the Martin and McKenna Paper Drive Show.
You've got to accentuate the positive, Evelyn. Mind it to negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You've got to spread joy up to the maximum. The drummer dropped his bridge work. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, listen, we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, do not mess with Mr. In Between.
You've got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch right on to the affirmative, and don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got to spread joy right up to the maximum, bring bloom right down to the minimum, have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark? Man, they say we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, not right on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Boo, that's the good sounds of Bing Crosby. And accentuate the positive on station KUWS. You know, Lou, we've been through quite a few of these drives together. Lots of sacrifice.
Yeah. War is hell, Mackinac.
We had a clothing drive last year.
That's when we got to feed Jack's underwear. Oh, boy, those women folks sure put us to shame in that. I'd say they were better organized, eh, fellas?
Goes to show who controls all the money anyway.
And the rubber drive.
Well, that one kind of left me all bouncy.
No, that's bad. Can't forget the blood drive.
As much as we'd like to.
That's when we sang My Wild Irish Rose.
Loudly and badly.
That was after drinking Axel Fennell's special elixir.
Yeah, we'll need a few more rounds of that before we can sing that again.
Now the paper drive. So what's next?
We need a man's man drive. Something just for us men.
That's called the draft.
Oh, here. Yeah, right.
That's it, friends. Stay tuned for the Lone Ranger and Gangbusters coming up next.
We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial. You've been warned. The good Lord willing, and they don't have a radio drive. For Lou Martin and the gang, then, this is Jack McKenna reminding you that war bonds mean freedom.
Bye-bye now.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1944, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Paul Guggenheimer plays foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Al Katz, Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1944 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.